The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours.
When you partner with Axon, you immediately gain access to a full range of products and solutions designed to meet the complex needs of today's grower. We carry all major brands and sizes of tires and wheels. We specialize in large diameter wheels for large equipment. We have one of the largest OEM replacement wheel inventories in North America. Known for extreme flotation setups, duals, and triples, we have wheels for all makes and models of tractors, sprayers, combines, and grain carts. If we don't have the wheel in stock, we'll custom build, sandblast, and paint in-house. There isn't a more vast inventory in North America dedicated to helping dealers move more iron. With facilities on the West Coast and in the heart of the Midwest, leverage our 230,000 square feet of indoor inventory to solve any problem a grower may have. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Marcus with Chip Nellinger. Chip is with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. It's nice enough to come on and talk about what's happening in the commodity market. Chip, how you doing, bud?
Doing well, Casey. Kind of getting over this a little new granddaughter now. And, you know, the thing about small children, especially ones that go to daycare, they get everyone sick around them. So,
yeah,
finally turned the corner off of a kind of a 3-week period. I was doing a lot of traveling in between, and then I was run down for a little while. But yeah, turning the corner, and looks like the warm weather's here to stay. Probably just jinxed it, but early spring it looks like to me. Yep. So things are looking up. It looks like.
Yeah, it's things are warmed up, and I tell you what, the thing about those kids too. I remember when my kids were little; it didn't take much. They were like a walking petri dish, you know, of just
exactly.
Of so yeah, it's so we got a couple things coming up. Let's talk a little bit recap the report that came out last week here. What did that been Thursday?
Yeah, came out on Friday. The March WASDE report. Yeah. No real big shocks there. They left everything domestically unchanged. Corn and beans. So no shock there. They didn't make any demand changes. It did come down just slightly, I think 15 million bushels on wheat demand. So the carryout was up a like amount in wheat. They only cut the Brazil bean crop by 1 million metric tons. That was less than expected. And the world numbers, world carryout on corn, beans, and wheat all went down. So that was mildly supportive. But we had a really good response to that report. It wasn't a wildly bearish, bullish report. Probably could even be seen as maybe a touch negative based on the expectations that the USDA would cut Brazil's bean crop more than they did at 1 million tons. I think the average estimate was about 2.2 or 2.3 million ton drop. But the market closed really well. So, you know, and so far today, as we're recording this on Monday, the market's holding together as well, shrugging off some of the overnight Sunday night weakness. So we've talked on past sessions here that the funds have a large short position built up. In fact, it was record short on beans here very recently. And, you know, a lot of uncertainty ahead of us. Acreage report at the end of this month. You've got about a 70-day window here where the South American, the Brazilian second crop corn season is full swing here. So weather really matters to them the next 60, 70 days here. And then our entire growing season ahead of us. So, you know, that's a lot of risk ahead. And if you're sitting here on the short side and you've got a lot of money made being short, you know, you got to logically think about, do I want to take some of that off the table, book some profits here ahead of all this uncertainty that is ahead of us? And so all told, that report was pretty neutral. Now, here tomorrow, Tuesday morning, we're going to get the update from CONAB, which is the kind of the Brazilian equivalent of the USDA. They're going to come out with their most recent estimate of their crop size. And that might actually be more important than what the USDA said on Friday. I think the market and the world in general realizes that when it comes to world numbers and estimates of crop sizes outside of the United States, the USDA takes a much more conservative, measured approach. They're more reactionary than being proactive. But CONAB is right in the middle of it. They've got better data. And so I think the world will be watching CONAB tomorrow morning to see, if they do cut, which is the expectation, and just how much they're going to cut. And that might go a long ways towards telling us whether the bean market has some additional short covering in a bigger rally, or if CONAB happens to be unchanged or doesn't go down much, that would probably be seen as a disappointment, saying, hey, maybe there is enough supply in the Southern Hemisphere that we don't have to rally a whole lot. So it's kind of the way we're setting up this week. We got through the USDA report, had a bullish reaction. I think that's really important. I don't want to overshadow that kind of a neutral, maybe even a little bit negative report, but the reaction was very friendly, and that might be the first sign that maybe we're ready to stop going lower and reverse course on some of these fund short positions as they buy some back, take some profits. 2 weeks till the end of the month, and then a pretty important volatile acreage report on the 28th of March that people, myself included, have a impossible time trying to predict what that is going to say.
Right. Exactly. Chip, Moving Iron's official data partner is Fusible, the home of Iron Solutions and EDA. Ignite your dealership's growth. And Fusible.com. All right. So, okay, you brought up a good point. I think that's well worth talking about. So that the report comes up this year at the end of this month here, the 20th, like you talked about. As you look at what's going on there, where the price of corn's at, all these different things, start talking about fringe acres and blah, 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 blah. As you look at that, Chip, last 2 weeks ago, I was at your Blue Leaf customer day, and I gave a dog and pony show there, and you guys were talking about that as part of your presentation about where those were going to fall into place and what you saw happening. You start looking at the price of cotton, the price of rice, you start looking at maybe soybeans, so start making some play because of they're not the most profitable thing either, but they're more profitable than corn is right now. I guess as you're looking at those things, what are your thoughts there, and how do you think that's going to play out?
Yeah, that's the $64 million question. And on top of that, this March prospective plannings report always to me, I just despise the report. I hate it. I think it's, you know, by the time it comes out on the 28th, it's as of information and surveys based on, you know, about the 1st of March. A lot of times prices can move a lot from the 1st of March until planting time and make, you know, producer decisions, financial decisions change. And so there's a lot of volatility around this report. And there's a lot of volatility between the March acreage report and then our final June report, which comes at the end of June. Well, many years, there's big swings between March and June on those acreage reports. So they are a wild card. They can and have moved the market. And I think that is the question, right? Because as you look at the far northern plains, the Dakotas especially, and probably specifically North Dakota, they had some massive corn yields up there last year. You know, in talking to people, you know, yields like they've never seen, 20, 30 bushels beyond what their previous best corn yields were in history. And if you're coming off of that type of a year yield-wise, you know, maybe you can make the argument we just are going to keep planting quite a bit of corn up here. It makes sense. Now, in the South, a little different discussion. They didn't have maybe as great a year last year yield-wise. They struggled with too wet early. They struggled with dry periods. And cotton, new crop cotton, December cotton futures have had a move, you know, up towards 85, or at least certainly north of 80, to where as you're looking at the, you know, at the balance sheet and the numbers as you crunch them out, cotton probably wins against corn in the South. So that might have a tendency to steal a million, million and a half, maybe as much as 2 million acres away from corn potentially. In the South on cotton. The guys in the middle, the I states, center part of the country, they don't change a lot, quite honestly. That's not historically where the acreage changes come from. They like planting corn. They a lot of times are stuck on their rotation too, you know, between these flip-flop between corn and beans. If they planted 600 acres of corn last year and 500 beans, then it's flip-flopped. And a lot of people stay in that rotation. But I can tell you too that planting dates matter to that as well. And that's another reason why you get a lot of volatility between the March and the June acreage reports. Historically, in the I states especially, you get producers planting early. They like planting corn. They like harvesting corn. Or maybe I said another way, they don't like harvesting beans, right? Because you get in a cornfield right. And you can just keep on rolling.
Right.
Whereas you get beans, they're pretty fickle at fall. And it takes a while sometimes to get them out, and they're just a headache. So planting date is and conditions are part of that too. So it all goes into the pot, Casey, and it makes it impossible to figure out what they're going to say. The expectations going in, we know from the USDA Outlook Forum in February that they're expecting, you know, a couple million less corn acres, a couple 2-3 million more bean acres. So that's going to kind of be the lean that the market takes going into this March acreage report. But to your point, you know, it's really hard to gauge, right? You know, maybe you still stay with a little heavier corn rotation in the Dakotas. Maybe you lose some corn to cotton in the South. And across the middle, you probably don't swing a whole lot. And then Mother Nature's going to have the final say-so, right? Is it going to be very early? If it's early planting, it probably means a few more corn acres. If we're struggling or have some wet weather, you know, it probably says a few more bean acres. And so it's really an uncertain, it's uncertain every year, but this year especially, it leads the market to be open for some big shock on that acreage report. And then we also have a quarterly stocks report out that same day as well. So there'll be a lot of information you know, by then, and then you're talking about a 2-week forecast that takes you out into April. And so planting progress here is going to start taking on more importance. And by the 1st of April, the weather really starts mattering more, and rainfall and temperatures in Brazil, especially across Mato Grosso, where, you know, a big chunk of that second crop corn crop is raised. So you got a lot of uncertainty dead ahead of this market. And from, you know, coming off of multi-year lows here in corn, beans, and wheat, there's not a lot of risk premium in the market, and the boat's kind of loaded and leaning to one direction on the short side here. So, you know, we've got the makings of some extra volatility here going forward, and maybe a little bit of a rally going into the end of the month and the first part of April.
So when you're looking at wheat, how does wheat play into this conversation that we're having right now?
Yeah, wheat, I'm telling you, have had some bearish. Wheat has just been so doggish. I bet there's been 9 attempts at rallies that probably should have run the funds out of some short positions, and they just add to it every time and pushes into new lows. You've had some negative news. As I mentioned, the USDA report up to the carryout, I think it was by 15 million bushels, 15 million bushel decrease in demand. We saw China last week cancel 2 cargoes of wheat. They came out and canceled another chunk of wheat. I should say 2 cargoes. I think it ended up being about 5 or 6 vessels last week. I think it was about 300,000 tons. I think it was a couple 100,000 and change this morning that China canceled of U.S. wheat purchases. But yet, for the first time in a long time, you threw bearish news at the wheat market, and we reversed and went higher. And we're higher. As I look right now, Chicago wheat is up a dime off of bearish news and China canceling wheat. So, I think one thing that's happening there is the funds had a big short position, and talking about market uncertainty, you know, we've had, 80 degree temperatures in the southern plains for a month now,
yep.
You know, literally. And yep. So there is no wheat in dormancy right now. It's greening up. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but for the next 6 weeks, maybe longer, there is a lot of wheat acres susceptible to severe damage if we drop these temperatures back, in sub-freezing into the 20s. Right. And again, you know, talking about risk premium, there's no risk premium for that in the market. I mean, so maybe finally the funds are saying, hey, I don't know whether that's going to happen, but it's not uncommon, in March or the first week or 10 days of April to see a freeze out in the southern plains. Excuse me. We've been short wheat for 18 months, made a lot of money. Why don't we get out of it and take our money off the table? And if it doesn't freeze, maybe we'll get back in on the short side. Excuse me, Casey.
No problem.
Doctor, I told you I'm getting over this thing. I'm 3 weeks trying to shake this, whatever I got from my precious little granddaughter. It felt like she was trying to kill me for the first week or 10 days of it.
Yeah, it happened, man. So let's talk a little bit about the short position side of things for a minute. It feels like the funds have been, record short, like you talked about, just forever. Like it's not since the first year, it feels like they just have not let off the short button at all. You know, you've talked about it. Rich Boston talked about it. Sean Hackett's talked about it. Rich Boston had a pretty good theory that they were just going to see, like his theory was, hey, we keep seeing this thing go lower. And as it's going lower, our short positions favor that. So we're just going to keep riding this thing down until someone tells us that it's not the right thing to do anymore. Then we're going to jump back out and see what happens and move from there. What do you think's driving the short position on the fund side?
Yeah, I have my own thoughts on this. I know some people kind of in that universe, and first of all, the term funds is a catch-all, right? And the reason we know that data is every Friday, the CFTC comes out with where the funds are as of Wednesday of that week. And so when these funds trade a lot of money and they have to report their positions, right? Because their position size is large enough that they actually have to weekly report the size of their position because there are position limits. And so that's how we get this commitment of traders, and we kind of know with a few days lag where the funds are. A lot of those guys, the majority of those guys, don't trade anything about what we were just talking about. They don't care how many acres we're going to plant. They don't care if wheat's going to freeze. They don't care if China's buying. They don't care if it's a record crop or if it's a drought. They trade off of technicals. They look at moving averages. They look at what X number of days highs or lows. And when their computer screen spits out at them, we need to be long corn, beans, wheat, or we need to sell and get short corn, beans, and wheat, they do it. And so, and then they add to it, right? They kind of, it's counter to what a normal human brain oftentimes, the way they think. They have a position that's working for them and they get a little bit of a rally. They add to the position and they just keep pressing it and pressing it and pressing it. And they end up making money more times than not. Now, they might only be right 3 or 4 times out of 10, but their wins are multiples of their losses, right? So it just so happens that sometimes, like right now, all the uncertainty causes farmers to quit selling, causes the commercials to say, guess what? There's a possible, you know, there's risk here to the wheat crop, for example. Maybe we should buy some. Maybe we should step up and increase our purchases for the next 3 months. And so it is enough to stop the market from going lower. And if the funds kind of quit adding to their shorts, it'll turn the moving averages. It'll get us past it'll put us into a new 10-day high or a 20-day high or a 50-day high. All these funds have just slightly different variables. And then it's just kind of a matter of course. The computer says, my trading model says, I don't need to be short wheat anymore or corn or beans. Let's get out, hit the button. And they don't mess around with it, right? If these funds, some of them trade 10, 15, 20,000 contracts. If the computer in the morning says, I need to buy wheat, they don't do it over a week's time. They hit the button and they get out. And that's what causes the action that you saw Friday. And people scratch their heads and say, oh my God, wheat was a bearish report and China's canceling wheat. But yet here we are going higher. We're 30 cents off the lows. And that's part of what drives that. And then it just is like, it becomes a psychological thing as well. So I've studied a lot about the movement and the psychology of markets. The funds, they don't have a memory. They don't oftentimes get caught. That's not to say there's not a fund here or there that trades on fundamental grain or livestock information. There are those. But by and large, they're trading a computer model, a trading model that's based on something other than fundamentals, moving averages or X number of day highs or lows. And it's part of, right, when we saw the drought in 2012 and they ran corn prices to, you know, whatever it was, 859 for a high, we wouldn't have been to 859 if it weren't for the funds piling on to long positions. So they overshoot the market both ways, but it hurts worse, you know, when it's to the downside. And I think we're coming to the point, and maybe have already seen the point where we've seen the maximum amount stretch too far, fundamentally undervalued. And now you've got all this uncertainty in the market. And for the first time, I mean, just oftentimes all you need to do, it's not a magic bullet and it's not, you know, going to make you $1 million. But just overlay, if you look at a chart, even a free charting package like Bar Chart, not to give anyone a commercial here, the CME has a free website you go to, overlay a 20-day moving average. We haven't seen corn or wheat above the 20-day moving average for literally like 8-9 months. And so once we finally did that last week, then it seems like now, okay, we're opening lower and closing higher instead of vice versa. It just changed that psychology. And it, in hindsight, you say, oh, well, it's X fundamental reason. But oftentimes it's just the funds trade such large positions. They use leverage, which sometimes backfires on them. It can enhance returns, but it can also, enhance their losses as well. And it just is part of what drives these cycles in the market. And hopefully we're past the bad cycle, going to see a bump into spring and give us some opportunities to, do some risk management from a farmer side.
Right on. Damn. That's good to know, because I figured they were trading the same thing everybody else is trading, but obviously they're not. So it's a whole different.
Not that some of them aren't, but by and large, they're trading what their computer model says, and it has more to do with moving averages and highs and lows than it does you know, fundamental information.
Right on. Damn. All right, Chip. Good place to stop. Thanks for being on. If folks want to reach out to you and get more information about what you're doing over at Blue Roof Ag Market, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, best way is just call our office. And that main number in Morton is 309-550-7213. We'd love to chat with you here ahead of spring planting and talk about what you're doing on the risk management side, because it's getting pretty dicey out there and we're getting pretty, you know, pretty tight. And so a marketing plan, a risk management plan is more critical than ever.
Right on. Okay. Chip, appreciate you being on, man. We'll catch you again next time.
All right. Thanks for having me, Casey.
Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook and Instagram, which I already told you about. So just go to the YouTube channel, which is the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel, which you can check me out there. And you can also go to TikTok. And, well, while you can, I guess, you can still go to TikTok and you can go to Snapchat and get all stuff there. New website out. Go to movingironllc.com and you check me out there. You can also check me out over on Successful Farming. I've got some articles and some podcasts up there as well. And that's at agriculture.com. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Chip Nellinger. It's going to be smart, folks. The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data. It's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. Find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
In the 21st century, hardworking people working hard for you and me, moving higher time and time again.